So last time we had a discussion at the end of Shia whether we should learn the Agadita or right. How you doing, Max? Or not learn the Agadita. And I didn't get your feedback, but I think I'm gonna take the license of at least interpreting one.
We asked to
one particular Agadita. Not, I don't know if we'll go through the whole thing, but I want to just take a quick look at Dorash Bar Kapora. And if you can tell me exactly where it is on Daf Hey Omen Aleph, it should be a few lines up from the bottom.
Yeah, I have it. It's about 10 lines up.
About 10 lines up from the bottom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gidolim Maise Tzadikim?
Yeah. Gidolim Maise Tzadikim Yoser Mi Maise Shomayim Va'aretz. The acts of the Tzadikim are even greater, they supersede in their significance the creation of Shomayim Va'aretz, means that which was created by God Himself. De ilu b'maisa shamayim v'aretz. Ksiv af yadi yasta eretz v'yemini tipcha shamayim. With my left hand, I established the earth. With my right hand, I established Shamayim. It means that Eretz and Shamayim were both created with one hand. Ve'ilu b'maisa yideyam shel tzadikim. And Rashi says it means the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Ksiv machon l'shiftecha pa'alta Hashem mikdash Hashem konenu yadecha. Konenu yadecha, the word yadecha is in plural. It means that the Beis HaMikdash was created with two hands, as opposed to Shamayim, which was created with one hand, and Aretz, likewise, with one hand. Now the Gemara has certain objections, but the Gemara ends up with this. So the obvious question is, why, in what sense, is Beis HaMikdash, with all due respect, greater than Shamayim v'Aretz? So the Rasha has something to say here, and he speaks about the Yamin is Midas HaRachamim, the Smol is Midas HaDin, and somehow the Tzadikim integrate both Rachamim and Din, and therefore they create with two hands. Fine. I just wanted to share with you a Maharal Miprag. He says the following. And this is his interpretation of the dream of Yaakov Avinu with the ladder. And Rashi says that the ladder, the foot of the ladder, was located in Beit El. The top of the ladder was in Shamayim. And Rashi says in his Perush Al Torah that the middle of the ladder paralleled Yerushalayim in the Makom HaMikdash. And the Maharal Miprag wants to understand what's the significance of the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is right there in the middle, paralleling the middle point. And what is the whole symbolism of the ladder? And the Maharal says that God created Shamayim and Aretz, and never the twain shall meet. Meaning the Aretz is down here, it's physical, it's material, it's limited, fine. And the Shamayim is the heavenly spheres, the celestial beings, the more, shall we say, supernal and eternal world of spirituality. And in a certain sense, God created them, Bedafka, that was the deliberate divine plan, that they should be two different worlds. But man was placed on earth in order to somehow connect between these two worlds. That's the challenge that man is faced with. And that's what the Beis HaMikdash represents. The Beis HaMikdash is situated midway between the earth and the Shamayim, because what the Beis HaMikdash represents is the possibility of connecting Shamayim and Aretz. The middle point is always meant to connect the two polar extremes. That's the purpose of the middle point. What the Beis HaMikdash gives us, the Jewish nation, the ability to do is to combine and connect Shamayim v'aretz. You know, Shamayim is light years away from Aretz, and we think that they're separate and inconnect. You know, Hashem created the Shamayim with one hand, and He created the Aretz with another hand. There's no connection. The Beis HaMikdash is Konenu Yodecha. It's the integration of both Shamayim and Aretz. And I don't have much to add to the Maharal, but I would add the following. That one very strong hashkafa, I think, in terms of what our goal is here in this world, what our challenge is to see this world, this physical, finite, material world, as a means to an end. It's not to be rejected. We're not saying that the material, physical world is evil, you know, is to be downtrodden in any sense. On the contrary, what we want to do is elevate this world. And that's what the Beis HaMikdash is all about. The Avodas HaMikdash is meant to tell us that yes, man, as physical as he is, can come close to the Ribono Shel Olam. The place for Hakrovas HaKorbanos, which is the epitome of Avodah, is the Beis HaMikdash. That's what Yaakov Avinu saw. He saw in his ladder that there was a possibility of connecting Shamayim v'aretz. And perhaps Yaakov Avinu, even more than the others that came before him, really personified this ability to integrate Shamayim and Aretz. It's not coincidental that Yaakov Avinu goes out to Chutz Laretz to face all the challenges of Golus. Chazal seemed to indicate that in the original plan, Yaakov would have been left out of the physical universe because Yaakov stole the blessings of Esav. Then he got the blessing of the physical universe, so that it wouldn't be Yaakov simply as a spiritual Tam Yoshev Oholim, but that Yaakov would be called upon to the greater challenge of taking over the role of Esav, which is a role which is very much rooted in this physical universe. And now Yaakov would take his Torah and create a kind of combination and integration of both the physicality and the spirituality and bring it all to a higher level. And that's the ladder that he sees in his dream. And that perhaps in that sense, the Beis HaMikdash supersedes in its significance even the creation of Shamayim. Okay, Rabosai, now we get to our sugya. So what you want to do now is take a look on Daf Heyomid Beis, the sugya of Iboiluhu. How many lines is it above the bottom of the page? Help me out here, because I unfortunately couldn't find the Gemara.
Right in the middle of the page. I mean, it's almost in the center of the page.
Of Hey Amid Beis.
Hey Amid Beis.
Okay, good. So we're on Hey Amid Beis. That's the first
middle of the Daf.
Important point. And we're on the middle of the Daf. Okay, great.
Yeah, just slightly.
Okay.
Slightly above the halfway.
Above the halfway.
Good. Iboilu. Now, before we embark on this very challenging project of trying to analyze this sugya of the Boilahu, what I wanted to share with you is the following. You know what? We probably should photocopy this. Okay, we'll see. If it's necessary, we'll photocopy this. Yes, in the Yalkut HaBi'urin, he says the following. One second, let me get myself a little bit oriented here. Okay. He says that there are three pturim in Melech HaShabbos. Three principles of Ptur, which will come to the fore in this sugya. You know what? So we'll look here on the left side. You should see a page that is, one second, that should say Nun Gimel on it. Do you have such a page? Mm-hmm. Nun Gimel on the left side, yeah? And we're looking at the second paragraph. So what are the three categories of Pturim in Melechah Shabbos? Very fundamental principles. They come to the fore here in our sugya of Ma'u Livol B'Tchila B'Shabbos. Number one is called a Dover She'eno Miskaven, which is a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. A person is carrying a chair, let's say, through ground, through, let's say, in his backyard or in, through his plantation, and he's making furrows in the ground. His kavana, his intention, his purpose is to transport the chair, right, the couch, the chair, and he also makes furrows in the ground. Charitzim ba'adom. Now, making charitzim in the ground is a malacha of choresh. So he doesn't have kavana to make the charitzim. So Rabbi Yehuda says in such a case, it's asur to do it, and Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter. Now, this machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda is a universal machlokas. It doesn't apply only within the confines of Hilchos Shabbos. For example, if a nazir is shampooing his hair and maybe combing his hair, whatever the case of chafifa is, then there's a possibility that he will rip out hairs from his head. And that possibility probably increases with age. That was a joke. Okay. So in such a case, Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to do this chafifa, this nazir is prohibited, because he's going, even though he has no kavana for it, he's going to take out hairs. That's a violation of the Issa Tisporis. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, matters it. And we have similar cases all over Shas. You know, we'll have a discussion about wearing begadim of shatnez for the purpose of transporting them. You're not really trying to warm yourself up. That's a dover she'eno miskaven. You're going to have a case of someone who takes a certain medication and he wants to heal himself from X, but it has a side effect. And be'eno miskaven, he's misaris himself. And Rav Shimon is mati. Oh. Now, it's important to emphasize that according to Rav Shimon, when we say a davar she'eno miskaven is mutter, that's exactly what we mean. It's mutter. It's not even an isur derabbanan. What is Rav Yehuda holding a davar she'eno miskaven? So it depends. Tosus says in the Sefer Yuma that if we're dealing with shar isurim, like nazir, then we're dealing with an Isur Doraisa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. If, on the other hand, we're dealing with Shabbos, then it's reduced from an Isur Doraisa to an Isur Derabbanan. So, Dover She'eno Miskaven, in the case of a Melech Shabbos situation, like the case we said, Gorer Adam Kisei V'Safsol, that Isur, according to Tosfos and Rabbi Yehuda, is only an Isur Derabbanan. Now, if it's a psik reisha situation, if we can predict the outcome up front, we know exactly what's going to happen, then Rav Shimon agrees that a davar she'eno miskaven is asur. When does Rav Shimon allow a davar she'eno miskaven? That's when it's not a psik reisha. The result of his action is uncertain. It may or may not happen. So, for example, if this chair, this couch is so heavy and the ground is so soft that we can predict beyond a shadow of a doubt with great certainty that it's going to make charitzim, then Rav Shimon would agree that psik reisha is us. He has no discussion about what's called Sikresha Delo Nichole. So I would like to be neder, show you something that Reb Chaim had to say about that, if we can find the Reb Chaim. I couldn't find the Gemara, but maybe I'll find the Reb Chaim. Okay, that's Roman numeral number one. Number two is a Malacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa, that's on the top left. Again, a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Again, Rabbi Yehuda is the machmir, and Rabbi Shimon is the mekil. But here there are a few changes. Number one, we're talking about a specific issue in Melecha Shabbos that has no bearing on any other Iser in the Torah. Number two, Rabbi Yehuda is going to tell you that in a Melecha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa Yechayev, right, if there were Edim and Asro, you get put to death. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, will say that a Melecha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa is Pater Aval Asr, which means that although the Torah permits it, nevertheless, the Rabbanan prohibited it. And perhaps we could ask the question, why is it that Reb Shimon in the Dabar Sheinu Maskavet is Matir, even Midrabban, even L'chadchila, whereas in Melech Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, he asks it Midrabbanan, I'll call upon it. And perhaps we could say that Reb Shimon was always equating on a Derabbanan level a Ptur in Shabbos with Kol HaTorah Kula. Meaning, if in Kol HaTorah Kula this halacha operates and alleviates you of any isur, for example, Davar Sheni Miskavim, which is mutter even in Nazir, then it will be mutter l'chadchil in Shabbos. But if in Kol HaTorah Kula it would be asur, for example, Melech Shein Tzrich L'Gufa has no bearing on any Iser outside of Shabbos, then in order to equate Shabbos with Kol HaTorah Kula, the Rabbanan asked. Now, what is the basis for Melacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa? Where is it rooted? After all, at least in the case of Davar Sheni Miskavim, we could say that an Avera is violated when you have Kavana. And we find that in mitzvahs also we might have a concept of a requirement of kavan. So it's not shocking to us that Rabbi Shimon would say that the Davar Sheni Miskavim is mutter. But Melech Shein Etzricha L'Gufa, which we said is mutter min haTorah according to Rabbi Shimon, but only in Hilcha Shabbos, there's no parallel elsewhere. Where? What is the source for that in Hilcha Shabbos? So before we answer that question, let's ask a different question. What is the case of a Melacha Shein Etzricha L'Gufa? And the classical case is called HaChofer Guma V'Ein Tzorach El Liafra. Let's say, for example, you need dirt. Right? You want to fill in something, or in the process of farming, you have to add dirt and so forth and so on. So you dig a hole, not because you want the hole, but because you want to get the dirt out of the hole. Well, let's say, for example, you move an object from place A to place B, from one reshus to the other, not because you want the object to be in place B, but you just want to get out of place A. Like, for example, the Gemara speaks about mess, the body of a dead person that you want to move it out of the house because, you know, it's intolerable and so forth and so on. It's not that you want to get it over to there, you want to get it out of here. Also, you have the case of Mechaber, which is a little bit more complicated, where he extinguishes a fire. And there, too, he's not interested in the classical purpose of kibui, which is to hold on to the psila that's burning. He just wants it to be dark in the room. So in any event, what is the source for the ptur of Melech Shein Etzricha L'Gufa according to Reb Shimon? And here we have machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi holds in Masechet Chagiga that the ptur is because he doesn't want the result that came to be. Meaning, it's only because he's in a no-win situation, that's why he has to do what he has to do. It's as if Rashi is saying that there's a lack of rutzon here on his part. Let's read Rashi's language. He says, "Bertzono lo hayabolo." If he had his druthers, he would not have to do this malacha. Lo hayitzarech lo oso malacha. V'hinach sheves a malacha shen itzricha. It's almost as if he's sort of compelled by circumstances to do the malacha. He would rather have avoided the malacha if he had his choice. So, for example, he doesn't want to make a hole in the ground. That doesn't interest him, ki uzeh. But that's the only way he can find the afar. He doesn't want to remove the mess. It's just that, and bring it over to here. He just wants to get it out of here.
That kid, the cases don't seem to... Does anyone distinguish between... They don't seem parallel, because one is... You really don't want to dig that earth up, but you're forced to.
Mm.
The mess is a little different. You need to remove it in some way. I don't know if anyone distinguishes between
those. Right, I hear what you're saying. You know, you want, but the only thing is, you know, we have to get into the why you want to put it down over here, and it's not really because you would have been happy if you didn't even have to touch the mess.
Okay, but the reality is, it's around. I mean, I'm just saying, sound.
All right.
If anyone distinguishes between those.
Right. So I just want to point out to you that Tosis has a whole different understanding of Malach Shein Tzrich L'Guf. Tosis says that where do we learn the Malachas from, the 39 Malachas? From the Mishkan. And in every case in the Mishkan, they did the Malacha, they performed the Malacha for a certain purpose. And that purpose for which the Malacha is done, that forevermore, you know, sets into stone exactly what purpose... Under what circumstances and for what purpose you violate the malacha. So, for example, when they made a hole in the ground in the Mishkan, that was in order to put Yesodos, to put down the foundations of the Mishkan. Or, alternatively, if they wanted to plant something, they made holes in the ground. Here, he's not interested at all, ki uzeh, in making these holes in the ground. And therefore, he doesn't do the malacha for the same tzarech that they did in the Mishkan. That's called a malacha shen tzricha l'gufa. It's eino dumya the Mishkan.
Does that ever get complicated with malacha and tolda? In other words, because sometimes you have examples, unless I'm mistaken, that a tolda is...
has a different tzarech, you mean?
Yeah, in other words, reflects the malacha, but it's... It sounds like those are close. Is that?
Let me think about it for a second.
Now, that's the only distinguishing factor, that a malacha shen tzrich l'gufa is where it changes a bit from the way it was done in the Mishkan. Don't we have examples of tolda like that?
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the tolda has to share the same tzorach as the av. Again, I don't have all the cases at my fingertips, but let's take the classical case of the Tolda.
Yes,
right? You have Notea, or let's call it Zorea, and he puts a seed in the ground, and the Tolda is Mashkiz Roim, where he pours water on his Zera in the ground. In both cases, it's Litzorech Gidul Utsmicha, so that the Chefta and the tzorach is one and the same. The difference between the av and the tolda is in the tzuras maisa malacha, but not in the cheftza shel malacha. The cheftza shel malacha is the same.
I mean, if we can say that, then that's
right.
If that works all the way through,
I don't know. I'm just giving you one example that comes to mind. All right. Now he points out here in the name of Rabbeinu Avram ben Rambam, that there's a fundamental difference between the two categories, the two principles that we mentioned, between Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa and Dover Shein Miskaven. He says, whereas a Dover Shein Miskaven means that he doesn't want to do the pu'ula at all, right? Let's say in the case where he's Gorer Safsol, he doesn't have any intention whatsoever for the Asiyas Charitz, right? He's not, if you ask me, am I digging holes in the ground? I would say absolutely not. It's not my intention, and maybe it's even counter to what I want to accomplish. In Malach Hashem, it's Tzricha L'Gufa, the Pa'ula is exactly what he has in mind. He wants to do the pula. He has full intention to do the pula. The issue is for what purpose? That's malacha she'ena sricha legufa. If he doesn't have the same purpose in mind, although he certainly has kavana for the pula. So again, in the case of, I would summarize Rabbeinu Avraham and Rambam in the following way. In the case of a Dovash Eidem Eskavim, we have two different pa'ulos that are going on. There's the change of location of the safsol, that's transportation, and then there's also creating charitza. Two things are going on. And as far as one particular pa'ula, he has intention. As far as the other pa'ula, he doesn't have intention. In the case of Lach Shan Tzuchel Guf, there's only one pa'ula that's happening. You know, he's digging his hand into the ground. That means he's making a hole. It's not that he's doing X and inadvertently does Y. He's doing one action, but the action could fulfill two different desires or two different goals. And that's where Malach Shen Tzuchel Gufa kicks in. Why is he interested in digging this hole? Is he interested in digging the hole because he wants the hole, or is he interested in digging the hole because he wants to dig? You know, he wants the soil that he's digging out. Now, why is a Malach Shen Tzuchel Gufa potter, according to Rav Shimon? So again, according to Tosis, it's because all Malachas have to be sized up to the Mishkan. And in this case, it's not Dumya de Mishkan. According to Rashi, that he doesn't really want it, you know, the situation was sort of thrust upon him against his will, that makes him to Malach Shen Tzuchel Gufa. So why is that potter? I mean, he made a decision to implement the Malacha. The answer is that Malachas Machsheves Asra Torah, the super principle, the underlying principle of many, many, many halachas and Shabbos is Malachas Machsheves, and Malachas Machsheves requires a very, very specific machshava. And here, he doesn't really have that machshava. He's only compelled to do this concept of Malachas Machsheves will become clearer, I think, when we get to the third category, which is on page Nundalet. Did I give you Nundalet? Oh, I didn't give you Nundalet. All right. So in this third category, we have something called Misasek. Now, Misasek, in a certain sense, is very similar to Dovash Eidem Eskavein, and it is a universal p'tur that applies way beyond the confines of Hilchos Shabbos. And therefore, if a person violates any isur, whatever the isur might be, b'misasek, then he's not liable for that violation. It's not just in Hilchos Shabbos. But having said that, it's very tricky, and you could come to the wrong conclusion, because there is a fundamental difference between misasek as a p'tur klali and universally applied in all isuri Torah, and misasek in regard to Shabbos. In regard to Kol HaTorah Kula, misasek means that he had no awareness of what he was doing. For example, if a person has something on his lap, let's say a heavy brick or something, he doesn't have any awareness that it's there, and he stands up, and lo and behold, it goes flying out and it damages. That would be misasek. If a person, for example, is blowing a shofar because he's cleaning out what's inside of the shofar and clogging the shofar, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, the tekiah comes out, that's called misasek. There's a total lack of awareness of what he is doing. For example, Tosis in one place in Shas says that if a person is asleep and he rolls over in his sleep and he breaks somebody's kli, that's called misasek. Total unawareness.
Turning on a light switch.
What, he doesn't even know that the light is going to go on. Is that what you mean?
No.
Like he opens the fridge?
No.
What?
I guess maybe it's not a good example. When you just walk in a room and you hit the switch. In other words,
You bang into the switch. That would be misasa.
How about doing it?
That would be a universal misasa.
How about doing it? In other words, with your hand, you're just not thinking. You walk in, you're talking, you're so used to it.
Correct. And you, you're unaware.
You forgot his job, you forgot it's us, or you mean?
No, not the, just that natural, you know, you just walk in and you haven't forgotten.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's happened to me.
Maybe? I don't know.
Or the wake up in the middle of the night, look at the phone, see what time it is.
Something like that.
Like a robotic act.
A robotic act, which people do. They walk in and, you know, hit a switch or walk out of a bathroom, you know, just... You know.
Yeah, that would probably be misasik and call it torgu.
That's misasik. Right?
I think so. I'm not sure, but I think so.
Is there an onus, or that's not... Is that sort of in the same... Well, that's the onus is something outside of your...
Right,
control.
That's a little different.
Right, so misasik is where you're doing it, but without any awareness.
Awareness, right. That's in Kol Tarkula. Now, the Chiddush of misasik in Shabbos is that he makes a certain error. It's not that he's unaware of his action, you know, it's not like he rolled over in bed, you know, or something like that. But, for example, and again, there are even within Shabbos, there are two basic categories of misasik. The first category of misasik is that he's unaware of the fact that this is mechubra l'karka. In other words, he thinks that what he sees on the ground has already been cut from the ground, and he pulls it up, and of course, inadvertently, he now is tolish, which is a told of Meleches Kotzer. Then he finds out that it was mechubar, and he violated Meleches Kotzer. That's called misasik. Okay? Then there's a second case of misasik, where he wants to pick up the white ones, and instead he picks up the black ones. Right? He knows that he's being tolish, but he thinks he's being tolish one object, and he turns out to being tolish another object. And at least according to Abaye, I'm not sure about Rava, but Abaye would certainly say that that too fits in the category of misasik. So niskaven lachtoch mechubar, he really had intention to cut something which is attached to the ground, but niskaven lachtoch mechubar zeh vechatach mechubar acher, but inadvertently he cut the wrong mechuber. It's only the wrong mechuber because of his mindset and his intention. So even though he has complete kavana for his pe'ula and he knows that it's isur, at least according to one opinion, that's called misasik and he's potter. Now clearly these cases fall into Meleches Shabbos. In Kol Tarkula that would not be considered misasik. So, for example, if a person murders Reuven, but he really wanted to murder Shimon, he will be put to death. That's not called misasik. But here in Shabbos, it's misasik. And why is it so? And the Gemara in Krisus says, because in Shabbos we have halacha of Meleches Machsheves. Meleches Machsheves means that there's a machshava here. Machsheves means you did exactly what you wanted to do. It was absolutely a perfect implementation of what you intended to do. Then he quotes here a machlokes in the Achronim about whether a misasik is considered an avera, and therefore he needs kapara, or it's not even avera at all. And I would submit to you that maybe misasik and kol haTorah kula is not an avera, but in Shabbos, in those unique cases, it would be considered an avera. And certainly in the last case that we mentioned of niskavim lachtoch zeh v'chotach zeh, but he hadn't intention to cut the mechubar, I would assume that in such a case he needs kapara. But in any event, Rabbi Kivega holds that misasik is like an over avera b'shogeg, and he needs kapara. If I'm not mistaken, the Rav told us that Reb Chaim was not happy with this Rav Kiveik. Remember, the Rav used to say that there were three Rav Kiveikers that Reb Chaim disagreed with. One was Ones, where Rav Kiveika held that he's involved in a Maisa Avera, but he's potter from Onshim. Reb Chaim held that Ones is not a Maisa Avera. The second one was an Avera of a cotton, where according to Rav Kiveika, it's not considered a Maisa Avera at all. Maisa cotton ain't a klum, and Rav Chaim held nain, it is a Maisa Avera. That's where he used to always invoke the principle, the proof from Shivcha Charufa, which is the case of a cotton, and if he's ben tes, then he's chayv a karbon. If it's not Maisa Avera, why would he have to bring a karbon? And the third machlok between Rav Kiveika and Rav Chaim was about misasik. Rav Kiveika was of the opinion misasik is a Maisa Avera, and you need kapara. And Rav Chaim held that Masasik is mafkia to my son there. Now I'm not sure, but I think even Rav Chaim only went so far. He wasn't willing to say that even the Masasik of Shabbos is a hafkas my son vera, but he meant that the Masasik of as a din klali, as a ptur klali in Kol Tarkula, that's not considered a Maisav Vira. This is a two-page introduction, which we just summarized, to our sugya. And now, let's begin our sugya. The Gemara asks the following question. Mahu livol betchila b'shabbos? Offhand, Rashi says, this question makes no sense. We've already quoted a brisa that you're not allowed to get married, you're not allowed to have the Bila Rishona on Friday night, on Motzi Shabbos, because Shem Yishchat Ben Ov, but on Friday night, Bishum Chabura. Chabura means because of the laws of Shabbos. So Rashi offers two possible answers. One answer is that he didn't know of that brisa, and this Gemara didn't know of that brisa. And the second answer is this brisa might not be la halacha. It could be that that brisa reflects the shita, for example, of Rabbi Yehuda, that a davar sheni miskaven is asur, but we paskin like Rabbi Shimon that a davar sheni miskaven is mutar. And therefore, what the Gemara is asking is ma'al livel betchilu b'shabbos. Even in the light of the brisa, how do we paskin? Tosus has a slightly different approach. Tosus thinks that maybe the brisa could be interpreted as halacha ben of, meaning even if the be'ila takes place on Friday night, then he might come to shef the ben of because following the be'ila they made a big suda. It's a little bit difficult because the brisa says mishum chabura. I mean, what does chabura have to do with ben of? I don't know. That's I didn't understand that. So the sugya here of Ma'u Livol B'tchila B'Shabbos is basically an analysis of two different halachas, maybe even three, and that is, number one, there's a principle called Eino Miskaven, and perhaps this Be'ila Rishona, he has no kavana to make a chabura. Number two, there's a principle that, and this is acceptable even according to Rabbi Yehuda, if it's an Eino Miskaven that's Asur, that Mekalkel is going to be an element here. And maybe here he's Mekalkel. Rashi is going to repeat this whole thing about the Ba'ula. A Basula is more Chashim than a Ba'ula.
Mekalkel means that it would be...
Say it again?
Mekalkel would mean that it's Mutter.
So that's going to be an issue. Maybe the Torah Mitzvah, it's going to be Mutter. We're going to have a lot to say about that. And the third issue that's going to come up over here is whether or not Chabura, in this case, is Chayav Mishum Chovel or Mishum Moleches Bona. And the Gemara is going to go through a variety of possibilities. So keep in mind that even if we assume A, that a Dom Shem Miskaven is Asur, like Rabbi Yehuda, even if we assume B, that this is not a case of Mekalkel, that he gains from creating this Pesach, we still have to ask a third question, and that is, what exactly is the Malacha that he is violating here? You want to call Dom Shem Miskaven, fine. And you want to say it's also like Rabbi Yehuda. You want to say it's not a Mekalkel and it's also fine. But what malach is he guilty of? And the Gemara is going to vacillate. Is it that he's making chabur by taking out the dam? Or is it that he's making a pesach, which is malach's bona? Now, he has a footnote here, and this is something that we touched on. I think, Aaron, you were here when we touched on this, which he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Tam, but I know he's referring to Rabbeinu Tam. Why is chabura awesome? Okay, the Gemara at the beginning is going to assume that if dam is chibur mefer, then there is chabur. What malacha are you violating? Every maisa of Chil Shabbos has to cover the one of 39 categories. So some rishonim And here we have a triple header, three-way machlokas. Some Rishonim are going to say that the Iser is netilas neshama. Even though, again, it's hard to say that this boel, by removing the dam, is taking out the neshama, says Rabbi Natam, hadam hu hanefesh, that the nefesh is in the dam, and when he takes out this dam, if it's nibur mepere, then he violates netilas neshama ki hadam hu hanefesh.
Another neshama is what malacha?
It's an av malacha. Netilas neshama is an av malacha.
That's one. That's not one of the. That's one of the av.
I think in the Mishnah it's called shochet, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But in Shas it's called called netilas neshama. Then we have the second possibility that if dam is chiburi mechrei, he is chayav for soveya, and this is going to, you know, enter into the whole problem of coloring or. Let's say, for example, in Shmona Shratzim, if you bang the sheretz and now the blood coagulates under the skin and changes the skin because those Shmona Shratzim have thick or, therefore you chayav mishum aleches soveya. Or the third possibility here, again in Dam Chiburi Mechbere, is perhaps Rashi Shita, I'm not sure, that it's Meleches Mefarik. Because by breaking the membrane and taking out something that's trapped within, that's called Mefarik. Mefarik means when you break an outer covering in order to get, by breaking it, you get the inside, you know, the seed or whatever's inside. And
even though there we get into the Shannon and Dover Shannon and Scavling, or
yeah, no, I'm just saying,
right,
no.
Right, right.
What, I'm sorry, maybe I wasn't clear. What I want to suggest here is that
the malacha,
before we entertain,
right.
You know, do we pass like review the Dover Shannon and Scavling? Do we not? Is this a Makalkina?
Right.
Just what malacha we dealing with in the first half of the sugya? What I mean is chiburi mechbere.
Mm-hmm.
Later the Gemara is going to say, forget about chiburi mechbere, there's another malacha here, he's making a Pesach, and that's malacha's bonus. But in the first half of the sugya, we're talking about chabura, and the question is, what is chabura? You know, give it a name. You know, what malacha is it? So we had two possibilities so far. We had, number one, the possibility of netilas neshama. Number two, the possibility of tzovea because there's dam going onto the skin. And now we have the third possibility of mefarik. Because again, if the dam is chiburi mechbere, then you're breaking the membrane in order to take out the dam. And perhaps that's Rashi's shita, I'm not sure. Take a look. Rashi says, chiburi mechbere. Dam besulin hayotze al yidei chabura huba shadofen misparek michavera. Again, there's no hefrek to say this, and it could very well be that Rashi holds that chiburi mefre is moleches netilus neshama, but Rashi does use some language that could possibly point in the direction of mefarek. And this touches on the old question of Ein Disha El Begduli Karka. Mefarik is a told of Dash. And the Gemara applies the principle of Ein Disha El Begduli Karka. That's complicated because Cholev, which is milking, is also a told of Dash. And there you're milking a cow. A cow is not Geduli Karka. So this problem is what Rabbi Avram Ben Aramam says, the difference between an av and a told, that sometimes you have limitation rules that apply to the av that don't apply to the told. And one example is Ein Disha El Begduli Karka. That limitation to Geduli Karka, says Rabbi Avram Ben Aramam, only applies within the context of the av. Once you drop down to the told, that original limitation rule no longer applies. It's very fascinating because it comes out according to Rabbeinu Avram that the Tola is more expansive than the Av.
Yeah.
And therefore, Cholev as a Tola of Dash, or in this case of Chiburi Mechbere, the act of Misparek, of being Mefarek, is a Tola of Dash, and yet in these cases we're not talking about Geduli Karka. Maybe there's a difference between the Tola and the Av. What's Mifkad Pakid? So So Rashi says, "Kamo pikadon kanus vi omed vi eino nivla bedofnei arechem." It's not the regular blood that circulates, but rather it's a separate pocket of blood, right? Kanus vi omed, that is outside the circulatory system. Therefore, there's no mafarik, according to Rashi. There would not be Natilus Neshama. The question is, how is Tzoveya going to be impacted here by Mifkid Pocket? I guess what we're saying is that in Mifkid Pocket, the dam just goes out, and it doesn't remain, you know, saturated in any surface level. Whereas, if it's Kibure Mefere, then there's still some amount of blood that still is Tzoveya, the base harechem, or the dofne harechem. It's a little bit different. It makes a lot more sense. I think it's a lot smoother if you go with either Natilus Neshama or with Mefarik. Okay, so let's see the Gemara inside. Iboilahu. Ma'olivol betchila b'Shabbos. Correct? And even though we saw a Braisa, but maybe we don't pass like that Braisa, Dam Mifkid Pakid. The dam is in a sack, you know, it's just being held back, but it, you cut that membrane and it just flows out. Oh, chibure michbar. It's really balua, it's really saturated in the skin, in the membrane, in the dofnei arech. Fine. Imtim tzalomar, dam mifkid pakid. Now the Gemara wants to say the following. Let's assume that you circumvent all the problems of chabura, whether it's the Tilsa Shom, it's the Farik, whatever it might be. But there's another possibility here, a whole different malacha that has nothing to do with the dam. And that is, imtim tzalom dam mifkid pocket, so there's no chabura, l'dam hu tzarech v'shari. I would have said it the other way around. Odilma l'fetach hu tzarech v'yasar. He needs to create an opening here to make it easier for him to have be'ila in the future. And that is a malacha, believe it or not, of bona. Okay? Now, why is it a malacha of bona? Of course, I have here a footnote. Odilma lepesach, Rashi says, Ariu kibinyan v'asur. Again, the language of Rashi is a little bit interesting. He doesn't say that he violates Meleches Bona, but it's Kim Bona. In any event, the most important thing that I want to call your attention to, as far as this Gemara is concerned, is a Rashi later on at Daf Vav Amid Beis, Dibra Maskel Chayov, that's quoted here in the footnote. And he writes, Shematzinu, this is Rashi on Vav Amid Beis, Matzinu Binyan Bebalei Chayim. Now, as we normally understand, the Meleches Binyan means creating, constructing a structure. What about Bali Chayim? What about live beings, whether it's an animal or it's a human being? Rashi says, Shenemar, at the beginning of the Chumash, Vayivan Hashem Elokim es Atzela, Asher Lakach min Adam Leisha. Here, God is not building a structure, He's creating a physical body of a human being, and yet, it says, Vayiven.
It's also strange to call it binyan when it's, you're not actually adding, you're like subtracting. In other words, it's not a, you're not.
Well, no, the classical case of binyan is when you create a Pesach. Like, for example, you know, you and I imagine that there's already a Pesach, we add the door, saying, right? And then adding a door.
Like taking out the cement. Or
correct. That is your classical case.
Classic. Okay.
Yeah, of Meleches Bona.
Yeah, I would think.
And creating a delus, right? And then there are cases where you have a temporary delus.
Right.
Or you create an opening into a temporary binyan aroi, like an oel. Whether that's considered bona or not.
I would say it's more than that. Makabe Patish seems like...
Oh, so that he quotes in the name there of the Chassam Sofer. You saw this already?
No, I didn't see that piece.
So he says in the name of the Chassam Sofer that the Chassam Sofer believes that the Isur here is not bona, but rather Makabe Patish.
It sounds like Hashem created this and you've perfected it with this last... And that's more of a makabe patish and a okay.
Yeah. So you're on the team of the of some sofer. But again, usually we say that makabe patish is not a structural change.
Right.
It's sort of like a finishing touch.
I would say that's what's happening here also. It's not a structural change, even though...
He's saying it's a structural change.
Right.
But look at the Gemara's language. The Gemara says, Pesach and Tzara.
Right.
Pesach is classically a bone
apple. If it's Nifkad or...
The Chiddush of the Gemara is that even though Dam Nifkid Pakid, it's irrelevant because he wants to create a Pesach. Forget about the Dam.
Is there an Afkamina there, how we view it, if it's Binyamaga or... In other words, depending on the anatomy, what's happening? In other words, is it that you are breaking through something? Is it that you're just pushing something aside? In other words, what is the difference between Mifkad Pakid and Chabura Nechwad?
This context or in round number one? Round number two, it's totally irrelevant.
I'm asking Mitzias, like, what are the, in other words...
The Mitzias is
that
whether...
That's a question of anatomy, isn't it? Is that a...
Now you have a good question, and this is going to be a long essay in the Likutin here. Is this a machlokas with Mitzias?
Right.
What's the halakhic issue here?
And then if we get the Mitzias down, now we can talk about, is it binyan? Is it, in other words...
Correct. But at this point, the Gemara is assuming that Dam Mifkad Pak. We're going to change that in a few minutes. But right now, we've solved the problem of Chabura, but the Gemara thinks we're not out in the clear because we may have a problem of Pesach. Whether it's Pesach according to Rashi, which is Molechas Bona, Pesach according to Sam Sofer, which is Molechas Makam Apatish, be that as it may, we have a problem of Pesach. Now, I just want you to be aware of something as we read the next line of the Gemara. The Gemara does not raise the issue of Mekalkel here. Later on, the Gemara, once it entertains the possibility of Meleches, of the Halacha being like Rabbi Yehuda, you know what, let's go through the Gemara. But as we go through the Gemara, please keep in the back, in the back pocket here, the fact that right now the Gemara could have said, "Intim tzalom le pesach utzarech mekalkel hu esal pesach." Maybe that's a kilkul. Maybe she's better off without this pesach simply because
a basula
is worth more than a ba'ula.
Right.
But the Gemara doesn't say that. The intent to lomar l'dam hu tzarech, that really he's not interested in what? In creating a Pesach. He's interested in getting the dam out of there. And here we have Machlokes Rashi Tosfos, but it's not so relevant to us. Rashi says he wants the dam in order to check out to guarantee that she was a psula.
Right.
Tosfos says he wants to get the dam out of there because he doesn't want to be mislachlech b'dam. Every time he has bia, maybe Tosfos also means there are issues here with Safek Dam Nidus and so forth. He just wants to get the Dam out. So now the Gemara wants to suggest that even if you assume with Dam Utsarech, that means he doesn't have Kavodah to make a Pesach. But what about Reb Shimon? What about Reb Yehuda? In other words, L'dam hu tzarech v'shari makes sense if you're all like Rav Shimon, that Dorshen Meskavit is mutar. He's interested in getting out the dam, he's not interested in creating a Pesach. But if, on the other hand, we paskin like Rav Yehuda, which Gemara validates such a possibility at least, then even if he's interested in getting out the dam and not in creating a Pesach, okay, but it's a Dorshen Meskavit, he created a Pesach. Is the intent to the dam with some person with male kaasi halach kir of Shimon the Amar Dovashen Miskavin Mutter or halach kir of Yehuda the Amar Dovashen Miskavin Asa? It's very interesting that the Gemara structures it in such a way that maybe Ladam Hutzarach Vishari, and the Gemara at that point doesn't even question that premise, and then the Gemara comes back and questions that premise. Now, it's usually in my experience, the Yom Tov is a development in a new logical step. You know, we're not regressing, we're progressing. Here, it's a sort of regress. You just finished telling me that Ladam Tzok for Shari, meaning because of Rav Shimon's principle of Dom Sheni Miskavi. Now you're telling me, well, wait a minute, is the halacha like Rav Shimon? Maybe the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, and therefore Dom Sheni Miskavi is also. I wasn't so comfortable with the way the Gemara presents this. Now,
it would seem to me, again, I don't know the Gemara, if there's, I'm not familiar with the Gemara, but it seems that one would be interested, the husband would be interested in both. In other words, he wants to know that the bia was done correctly. He wants the dam and he wants the pesach. In other words, isn't that
right? I guess the Gemara is trying to vacillate about
on
what his eager kavan is. You know, what's his primary interest?
Is there? I mean, again, I would just.
Why is he doing?
Balabatish, I would just say he wants both. He wants to be done right. He wants both things to happen. He wants.
Right.
He
if
wants,
that be the case, then even Reb Shimon would agree lepesach utzar.
Right. Yeah.
But the Gemara thinks in the Halavina that maybe ledam utzar and. He's not at all interested in the Pesach. You know, you might ask the question, why not? I mean, he does gain a Pesach. Maybe he gets benefit by...
He doesn't want the Pesach. I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, it's... saying mitzvah-wise, it's hard to say.
Let me just read to you what he says here. I don't know if it's relevant. Kavodas HaGemara Lomar Shalafit Sad Shadam Mifkid Pokiv V'en Isu Chavola Af im miskaving ledam mutter, for who I didn't miskaving lanos axmo, shekol shein kavanos lepesach, ein who miskaving umutter. Interesting. He wants to say that he just wants hano. He's like interested in the here and the now, and he's not interested in creating a pesach. Creating a pesach is something that might be meaningful down the line. Now there's another point that I wanted to make, and that is Tosus Dibra Maskel Mahu. Do you see this long Tosus on the side? And Tosus is bothered by the following question. He says the Mishnah established that a person should be Boel in the case of a Basula on Revi, or possibly not on Yom Revi itself, but Leil Chamishi, and the reason is because of Tainas Basula. Now, if that be the case, then why is the Mishnah compelled to force us into this position of having the Be'ilah on Thursday because of Titus Besulin? Forget about Titus Besulin. He's going to have the Be'ilah on Leil Chamishi because otherwise, if he delays it for a day, he's going to violate Shabbos. Meaning, if there's an issue of meleches, whatever, chabura or bona, whatever it might be, then why does the Mishnah need the Tainus Besulin element here?
Because that's Wednesday night as opposed to Thursday night. We want the Elon on Wednesday night so we can get to Bezdin Thursday morning.
Right.
It's this issue, the Shabbos, that doesn't know. That's.
So again, let's try to understand Tosis Kash. You see, the problem is that Tosis doesn't actually spell out his Kash. He writes, Afal Gav de Tiknu.
No, but that's not a question because that takes off the Thursday night issue. In other words, we want to make sure he does it Wednesday night so he gets to Bezdin Thursday morning.
That is correct. So what is bothering Tosis? Yeah. That's what I'm trying to figure out. The afal gav the tiknu shetehe besulin eses mervi? Question mark. So what is he asking? The takana of Mishnah was that he has to do the be'ila either Wednesday or the latest...
that Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, correct?
Right.
And that's because of what?
So
of Tainas besulin.
Thursday morning, right.
Correct? So then what... Why do I need Tainus Besulin to compel him to do the Be'ilah by by the latest Thursday, right? The night of Wednesday Thursday going morning, into Thursday,
right.
When in any event he can't postpone the Be'ilah because
he can to Thursday night.
To Thursday night. Okay. So that's what he says perhaps in his answer. Let's see. Tosa's answer is Mikomakom in Irolo Shalobal Bilel Hamishi Lochivu Chachomim Lahamtin Ad Yom Hamishi Acher or Ad Yom Sheni. Again, Tosas is saying that he married her on a Wednesday, but he didn't have Be'ilah until Shabbos. So what do we do in such a case? Does he have to postpone his Be'ilah until the following week? Right? You okay?
Yeah.
Does he have to postpone his Be'ilah until the following week because he can't have the Be'ilah on Friday night?
Okay, so that's the big
question. That depends on whether or not it's similar. Okay, let's stop.